Hello and welcome to the Heat Unmissables podcast. I'm Boyd Hilton. I'm the host of what can only be described as a weekly look at the cultural highlights that are out there right now, from television to other television, and sometimes a film, maybe even a piece of music like an album or maybe a book, but generally lots of television. I'm joined by two extraordinarily talented and clever colleagues, Steph Seelan and Kay Ribeiro.
Stop. Just stop. It's too much. Carry on.
Factually
true.
I'm happy with it.
If you want to see what we look like, in the new issue of Heat magazine, there's like an ad for the Unmissables at the beginning of the section. It's a section called the Unmissables, which is what it all was tied up with. And you can see all of us together, and you can see people have the right to see what we look like.
Explain it quickly.
Okay.
In one nutshell.
There is a photo that appears in the current issue of Heat magazine, which is a horrendous photo where Kay looks like she's got no eyes and I look like I've got a beak. And we just had to have another photo taken because we obviously didn't want you to think that I had a beak and Kay had no eyes. So I don't know why, but we just had to have it taken again.
Yeah, fair enough. So there'll be another photo next week's issue, which will be even better. We will look even more astonishingly attractive.
I've got one eye.
Yeah. This week, we're going to be looking at, among other things, well, these are the main things, Friends from College, which is the new comedy on the Netflix. The Beguiled, which is the very exciting remake of the Clint Eastwood film, this time from director Sofia Coppola.
Coppola.
Thank you. With Nicole Kidman and others. Nadia's British Food Adventure, which is Nadia out of the Great British Bake Off, her new series. Mm-hmm. And most controversially of all, the film L, which is just out yesterday on DVD and Blu-ray and digital download and all that, if you're very modern. And we decided to talk about that because I think it's one of the most controversial films of recent years, and I thought it would be interesting for us to have a deep dive into it.
Kay looks so scared.
She looks very scared. I don't know why.
Scared, traumatised.
Yeah. Oh. So Elle, starring Isabelle Huppert. She was nominated for an Oscar. Mm. Didn't
so
win.
Fluent.
Robbed, some would say, me. We'll get to that later, though. That's not... Yeah, no? Spoiler alert?
No, I robbed, yeah. But yeah.
Before we go on to the main issues at hand of what's happening in the world of pop culture, mainly television, with some films, I should say that please do give us your feedback. Yes, let us know on Twitter, at Boyd Hilton, that's me, at Steph Seelan, at Kay Ribeiro. Put the hashtag POGS, people on the ground, stands for, which we consider to be people who have stuff to say, but are normal people, yeah. People on the ground.
The best people.
And yeah, if you have any questions, queries, comments, observations, and also please rate and review us on the iTunes. But without any more messing around, it's the opening What Have We Been Watching This Week section. I'm going to turn to Steph Seelan, who clearly has something on her mind.
I do have something on my mind. Now, did you both watch the final episode of Broken?
No.
Can I just say that you both need to watch it because this might sound like a bold claim, but it is one of the most perfect final episodes of a drama I've ever seen. It had tears, it had joy, it was so beautiful.
So it did it have joy? Because every week you're telling us like it's depressing, right. It's making you cry.
Yeah, and this is the thing that I was worried about because it was so hyper-realistic in terms of the stuff that it was covering with, you know, a depressing town where people are very poor. I thought, how are they going to finish this? Because Sean Bean was going through some real trauma as a priest. They couldn't all of a sudden make it super, super happy. So it's always going to be very, very difficult to keep the tone, but they managed it and it is perfect. He is going to get a BAFTA for this.
To be fair to you, I've seen a lot of people saying that's this kind of thing on the social media, on Twitter,
everyone's
on Facebook.
Talking about it, yeah.
Yeah, in real life, IRL, people have said to me, the people on the ground. I have to watch it, yeah, I will watch it.
It's really, really
I'm pleased because I'm a huge fan of Jimmy McGovern, the writer, who wrote like Hillsborough and
amazing.
Things. Yeah, and Sean Bean, of course, yeah. Thrilled. Yeah. No, I'm going to check it out.
In my mum's words, she was like, that Jimmy McGovern has done a really good job there.
Endorsed by Miss Seelan.
Yeah.
Slightly damning with faint praise, but yeah.
No, he's done a really good job.
Kay, what has excited, delighted, thrilled you this week?
Two things. Well, I watched all of Riviera now. I've done with it. Have you watched it?
I watched it.
Okay.
I watched it because I heard you sort of talking about it and I was like, I better watch this quick.
Yeah. So
I watched the first two and then I didn't give up, but then I stopped, paused. Yeah, carry on.
Okay, so I wanted to see how it ended. That's why I watched, obviously, till the end. And I have to say, it's not great.
Oh dear.
I would say
it's not great. It's like, I think, a waste of a good cast. Particularly, I'm speaking about the guy from Game of Thrones, whose name I can't say.
Euan Rheon.
Yep.
Who has got country music albums out.
What?
Yes.
Hold on a minute. Shut
the front door.
We might have to start this podcast again.
Do you know what? The only reason I know this, I didn't know that he was a musician and he had an album deal. I think I did it as a news story in Heat about a year ago. And so our lovely colleague Sophie Bland, alerted me to the fact. She literally just kind of said, Boyd, and she said, do you know what I'm listening to at the moment? Euan Rheon's country album.
She's obsessed with him.
She is obsessed with him. And it exists. It's out now.
Right, maybe, we'll review it next week.
Well, it's been out for ages, but...
Doesn't matter.
No,
let's
doesn't
do
matter.
It.
Maybe let's do it. Yeah,
let's do it.
So,
it doesn't matter.
I know.
I can't
Euan Rheon's it's a country album. Yeah. So anyway, carry on. Euan Rheon is in Riviera.
Yeah, and I felt like he was wasted. And I don't know if you agree, Steph. I know you like Julia Stiles. Don't you feel she's really wooden in this?
When we first watched it, and I'd watched a couple, and I said, I did actually, apologies to you, because I disagreed with you. I was like, no, I think she's really good. My God, she grated on me for the duration of the rest of it. I was like, oh no, she is not good.
And I felt like the last scene's just so far-fetched, not keeping with her character, which, I mean, like, she's an art dealer, but turned 007 type character as well. Which is
investigation, like the death of her husband.
Yeah, investigating the death of a billionaire husband. Yeah. It was just...
It's interesting you say that because I alerted you as well to the existence... There was an article in The Guardian last week about how the people who created this show, like the director Neil Jordan, legendary director of The Crying Game and other stuff, and John Banville, who's a brilliant novelist, they created it together from an idea by Paul McGuinness, who's U2's manager, right?
What?
Weirdly, yeah.
It's like an Irish cultural mafia.
That's the thing they've got in common. in the best possible way. And they created it, and then they've disowned it. So Neil Jordan and John Melville have disowned it. I think McGuinness is still involved. But it just didn't go. They kind of, the creative power was taken away from them.
I can totally get it.
And so lots of other writers have come in and taken over. It's interesting. So, I'm, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going
to
be...
How much have you got to hate it to disown it? Like, publicly disown
it? His work, he is saying, had been rewritten.
No, but that's what I mean. It's like, gosh, you must feel like that. It's so far from what you... From any idea that you had in your head.
I think it's just, you know, they wanted complete creative control. This is, you know, and they just didn't get it. So that from that point on, they're like, right, we're out.
I feel like the way it ended as well wasn't neatly wrapped up. So as if there's imagining a second series.
I'm sure
that
it's done really well on Sky Atlantic, though,
but
I should say.
Also, the way it ended, I just didn't care because I thought it got to that point where it was so wooden. I totally agree. I hate to say it, but I think Julia Stiles sort of ruined it for me in the end.
Oh, my
Because she didn't... I thought she was going to have a bit more flair, and it never quite... Yeah. She never quite stirred to the point of being
quite
exciting.
One-dimensional, Euan's character. But also, secondly, I just want to tell you quickly that I spoke to Katie Price.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So I've interviewed Katie Price.
So we reviewed her new show last week, Katie Price and My Crazy Life on QuestRed.
And what is really good about us reviewing it last week is that when I went to talk to her about it, I was talking to her about her music, essentially, and I said, oh, yeah, I've seen your show. And she's like...
You didn't just roll up. This is for the Heat interview.
Sorry.
I want to chat with Katie this week.
Yeah, I'm just going to go to her.
Hey, what are you doing?
Hey, tapped her on the shoulder.
No, she was in that Heat Radio doing promoting her new single. And I said to her, oh, yeah, I've seen your show. She has not seen it herself.
That's
she
incredible.
She was like, are you kidding me? What's it like? And fortunately, I had my pod notes with me. I was like, well, you talk about this. She's like, oh my God, do they include that? She like had no clue.
Because
that's
bizarre,
she
isn't
has no control over the edit, she
told
me.
Show.
No,
it's uninteresting that they're clearly withholding it from her. They're not sending her a copy of it.
But you'd think that she would... Be saying
She said she's got no edit control over the whole thing. She said she hasn't
Amazing.
Seen it. And so I didn't even get to tell her that I watched episode 3, which is dedicated solely to Kieran shooting rats in the garden.
But did she tell you what QuestRed, why it was called QuestRed, the channel that it was on?
I can't imagine she knows or cares.
I'll just say it again. No one has actually come forward to tell us why.
Do you know what? There's a channel called Quest. I did more because I wrote my column about this. It's out today.
Your column about why it was called QuestRed?
Partly. I spent the first half of the column talking about QuestRed, the issue.
Fair enough.
There's a channel called Quest. I found that out, which is, you know, it's all owned by Discovery. And then QuestRed is like their spin-off reality TV channel. But still, why Red?
Oh my God, to be the spin-off channel of a channel that no one knows about is awful. awful.
It's the colour of heat. That's why they chose it.
It's the colour of heat. There you go. Anyway, you're probably wondering what I am excited about this week.
Hold on a minute. Wait there. Yeah. Hey, Boyd.
Thanks.
What are you watching?
Yeah.
I just want to say, funnily enough, before we started recording this podcast, me and John Dan, our producer, guru, editor extraordinaire, were talking how this is an incredible period.
Above all else.
This is an incredible period for cinema.
That
mainstream, big mainstream films, they're all turning out to be incredibly good. So Spider-Man Homecoming, which we did last week, which we gave 5 stars to,
loved
is brilliant.
It.
Out on Friday was a film called It Comes at Night, which is a horror film. you may laugh.
Sorry,
we're being
very
the title.
What's
it to John Jack?
Nothing to do
about?
With our sexy special. It Comes at Night is the provocatively titled horror film, which is set in a bleak post-apocalyptic future where disease has ruined half the world.
I cannot believe you got all of those words in. I'm so impressed.
I did. And it's fantastically good. It's brilliantly. It's kind of disturbing and scary. The title's a bit misleading because it's not like a traditional horror film.
Who's in it?
Now, Joel Edgerton is in it.
Oh, I like him.
And this brilliant young actor called Kelvin Harrison Jr., who's this kind of teenage boy who has nightmares about this post-apocalyptic disease situation. And it's just incredibly disturbing, but brilliantly done film. So that's out already.
Right.
And that's a brilliant, huge, big horror film. Then out tomorrow, on Wednesday, is War for the Planet of the Apes, the third in the trilogy of the Planet of the Apes reboot, following on from Rotpeter and Dotpeter. Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. This is Wolfpeter.
Wolfpeter?
Yeah, War for the Planet of the Apes. And it is phenomenally good.
Is it?
It's so good. It's like a Western meets The Great Escape, meets like a concentration camp film, meets...
Oh, God.
It's disturbing as well in its way and quite dark and beautifully done, but also incredibly emotionally engaging. Where the apes are the main characters.
I don't like
the
it.
Main characters.
The main characters are the apes now.
I don't like
honestly,
those films.
You don't like... What?
I should know why. Because
you've got a weird reason, like going back to... Have you seen an ape
really like
doing
apes.
Stuff you didn't want the ape to
I
do?
Just,
in,
I find
he was with
really
friends with Ricky Whittle.
I find them really scary. And I just... In the first one, it really upset me when he got the language and stuff and then met all the really mean apes.
He got the
I
got a bad case of the language.
Now he's speaking.
I do like the Helena Bonham Carter one.
You are kidding me.
I think we've had this discussion before. They're friendly.
The shit one directed by Helena Bonham Carter.
Mark, please.
Mark Wahlberg is absolutely fine in that. That's a gentle. They're a gentler way to see the apes, I think.
That is a terrible film. I'm sorry. That Helena Bonham Carter one is shocking.
I think she's a sweet ape.
Okay. Well, there you go. I think I'll let others decide. What to think about your rejection
it.
Of...
No, I appreciate it. It's the CGI
John
is
Dan,
fabulous.
John Dan said that this Apes trilogy may be the best trilogy so far of the 20th century. And I think he might be right.
But I usually agree with everything he says, so, okay.
Does he even exist?
What
no one
am
hears
I talking
him,
about?
I mean.
Anyway, everyone should go and see both those films. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Let's get on. Let's crack on with the matters in hand. This week's cultural artefacts. Starting with... Yes.
Nice one.
I think it sound like some kind of thing we've dug up. The first one is yet another brand new thing from Netflix. 10 new episodes are going to drop this Friday, the 14th. It's called Friends from College. It's a half-hour comedy show, effectively. And some would say quite boldly, it's got the word friends in the title, because it is about six people who gather together, who are friends, like the original Friends. Okay, look at me like I'm mad.
No, I understand. But
And they all met each other at college, and they all kind of reunite because two of them, a couple that have been away in Chicago for years, now decided to move back to New York, so they're all back reunited in New York. So it is kind of got that Friends vibe, but it's like a really, it's like Friends with swearing, sex and nudity, isn't it? That's my vision of what this is.
Yeah, and they obviously know because they linger, in the opening credits, they linger on the word Friends. But then I always think about the films Friends with Money and Friends with Kids.
Mm. So wait a minute, are we saying that post-Friends, nothing can have Friends in the title?
I'm saying...
Them's the rules, Kay.
They can have Friends in the title.
I didn't see the book.
Go ahead, have Friends in the title, but don't expect us not to talk about the fact.
Yeah, that it's
going to be... bloody well talk
it's
about
gonna
it.
It's going to be compared to Friends, Kay.
If you want to be that bold, we're going to talk about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Just slap the table. We should also say it's created by Nicholas Stoller. Who he? He is the guy who directed Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Neighbours, or Bad Neighbours it's known here, and The Muppets. He's a really good director.
The Muppets?
The Muppets.
You're on a roll.
Yeah.
What a funny collection of things.
No, but he's really good. And he co-wrote it, co-created it with his own wife, Francesca Del Banco.
Not somebody else's wife.
Yeah, not somebody else's wife. His own actual wife. And it stars Keegan-Michael Key. Do you know who he is?
No, I love Key. I love Keegan-Michael Key.
Who is he? Explain.
A man.
He's from the Key and Peele.
Okay, yeah,
yes,
I was
going to
say, are you... Boy, he's on how many coffees have you had?
He's on such a roll, man. Just go for it.
Key and Peele, man. And he did, he's in Fargo, and he did Keanu, that film about the, was it Cat?
Keanu Reeves?
About the cat.
Keanu about the cat.
It was about the cat.
What?
I don't know, I was just thinking about that film. It was so funny.
Oh, I thought it was not about Cat.
I thought you were still referring to who he.
It's definitely about Cat. He's in it. Kobe Smulders is in it. Fred Savage is in it from Out of the Wonder Years.
A lot of love for the Savage.
Incredible. And he plays this gay publisher who is publishing the book that's being written by Keegan-Michael Key's character. And Keegan-Michael Key's character, this is not a spoiler, we find this out in literally the very first scene, don't we? Mm-hmm. He has been having an affair for literally 20 years behind the back with this woman who's married to another of their team, of their gang, if you like, that they all
have. What a
shit. So that's the premise. I think I've explained the premise.
But you know you've done more than that.
You've given it life.
More than it being outrageous that it's got friends in the title, right, is I actually think it's very strange casting of them to cast Kobe Smulders in it when she of so famous How I Met Your Mother also a
another
brand,
show yeah about a little gaggle of
now
mates, yeah.
I don't want to make this one of my things, but I found that quite difficult because Kobe Smulders obviously was huge part of How I Met Your Mother. She was part of that gang, and then this is not a spoiler, you're not going to go back and watch How I Met Your Mother, so she ends up as being like the person who Kay's covering her ears like she's going to go and watch.
But you're about to say the spoiler of the entire like, 9 seasons it's too late now.
No, she's not. I mean, that's why she lives up to a reputation of spoiler stuff.
No, it's fair enough though.
No, people don't say that, people will attach themselves to that. Oh, spoiler stuff here. So
I think it's a
bold move to cast her in
it
this.
It is
because people are like, oh,
totally.
It's just Robin. Yeah.
She is now a big movie star as well, though, because she was in the Jack Reacher film with the Tom Cruise.
Yeah, with the Tom, because she was all right in that.
She's really good. I think she's great. I like Kobe Smulders.
I like her as, you know, she's in the Avengers films, isn't she? Because she's a member of the S.H.I.E.L.D. gang.
Yes.
I like her in that. I'll accept her as that.
She's always good. So apart from that little weird thing that's annoyed you, which is a bit like the weird things that annoy you going back to...
Ricky Whittle.
Ricky Whittle. She's a Ricky... We should coin a phrase, shouldn't we? The Ricky Whittle factor or something.
It is.
Little weird things that niggle at you, which are slightly illogical.
Yeah.
Because basically you didn't like Ricky Whittle because he played football topless with his mates in LA.
Yeah, he just...
You'd seen him topless playing football.
And that annoyed you.
And that irritated the hell out of you.
No, it's because I told you, one of his friends was like, oh, do you want to take some photos of Ricky Whittle? And I was like, no. What?
So it wasn't even, it wasn't even directly him. It wasn't him who wanted the photo. It's an associate.
He was him over. He was an idiot by proxy.
Idiot by proxy, okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, so if we let that get out, not let that get in the way, the Kobe Smulders factor.
Yeah.
What do you think of this show, Friends from College?
I really liked it because of my age, I think. Because I found it really relatable. Not that I'm having an affair with anyone or anything like that. But
are you?
They're 40, by the way. So we're outing Seth as now a 40-year-old.
I'm not 40.
I was going to say you're a millennial.
Millennials keep shifting. The millennial thing keeps shifting. Yeah. I mean, I thought I was a millennial because I was born in 1981. Kay's just narrowly made it as well. But we're not anymore. Anyway,
the definition of millennial.
It's somebody between the ages of 18 and 34, isn't it?
Is it? Oh, okay.
So we're definitely not millennials.
Well, we're not now, but a few years ago we were.
Oh yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Anyway, right. I liked it. I think there's a lot of sex in this at the beginning. So you see you basically see all of Keenan Michael Key's buttocks, front bits, everything.
Do you see his
knob? No. Oh.
Crass.
No, but I will say,
I felt like there
was something waving around a little bit in
really?
Initial scene.
Oh, God, I have to have a closer look.
No, I really liked it.
I love that. That's the new proof.
The whole thing about this gang is that actually they're all at a time of their lives where they're kind of competing with each other. I mean, they make a nod to the fact that whenever we get together, there's always this competition. And that's, to me, really interesting because it's a strange time of your life, isn't it, where you're kind of... I think once she gets past 40, you stop caring about what other people think. But just before that, you kind of care about where you are and have you hit all your life goals and stuff. So, again, not a spoiler, but one of the couples is trying to have a baby, you know, one of them struggling with their career. So they've got kind of very relatable problems. Mm. And one of them is incredibly rich, but obviously very unhappy. She's got an amazing house in the Hamptons.
That house.
Oh, dream. But yeah, she's got. Yeah. But you know who else is in it? The guy who is the guy on the street. What's his name? Who does all those shouty
Person on the ground. Street.
No.
Shouty
Pog.
Oh,
she's going to really annoy me.
Oh, Billy Eichner. Yeah, Billy
on the streets. And I love him. And he's in it. And
Does he play Fred Savage's boyfriend?
Yeah.
Yes, the doctor.
He's
really funny.
Who's
he's
very good. He plays a humorless fertility expert.
Yeah, he's brilliant. Yeah.
But the funniest thing in it.
Yeah, so there's these YouTube things, right, of him. Yeah.
And he goes and asks people questions on the street and shouts at them in New York. It's very funny.
Which it's a good point. It does open, it does set out its stall, doesn't it, with the opening scene, this very realistic
scene. A warning to any prudes / prudences out there. Ooh.
People who can't take a bit of body heat.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh.
I'm into body heat.
Yeah, you're pro body heat.
I'm not prudent.
No, no.
But yeah, straight away, there's mentions of pleasure grimace, trying to get some purchase.
In a sex scene. Keegan-Michael Hall has sex with his, I'll call him mistress, played by Annie Paris. These two that are having this affair behind everyone else's back. And they have this, I thought, very funny, kind of realistic sex scene where he doesn't have a condom to hand. She wants to go at him to go off.
He has to go on the run for it.
And those things happen,
And then the moment's gone.
And the moment's gone.
The moment's gone.
Yeah.
The whole thing is, though, that they... Then the couple, Ethan, who's played by...
Keegan-Michael Hall.
Yes. Him and his wife decide to move back to New York, so it puts them in the epicentre of both the reunion and where all their friends live and where...
I called him Keegan-Michael Hall. That was...
Keegan-Michael Key. It's Keegan-Michael Key.
Who is this someone, Michael Hall, isn't there?
Michael C. Hall, he of Dexter.
Yes.
He's not in it.
No, he's not in it at all. No, do you remember? I've mentioned this before. There was a sketch called "The Forgettables," where people forget all the names of everyone. I am.
This is like the 13th episode.
I'm very old. I am old.
You're a millennial.
I'm not a millennial. I'm definitely pre-millennial.
The boundaries have changed, boy. Yeah. But can I just say, I really love Fred Savage in it as well,
and also because
Wonder Years, amazing to have him back. And I didn't realise, I looked it up, that he's a director and producer.
Who's
worked on like Modern Family. No clue about that. Ugly Betty. But also, he's been in some films. Now, tell me if you watch them. Single White Millionaire. Have you seen that?
No.
Or, and this is quite the favourite, Being Bin Laden.
No.
He is in that.
He's in a comedy film, isn't he, where he's got a big thing on his face. He's got a big mole on his face, but I can't remember what comedy. Someone will correct me.
Boyd Hilton, hashtag pops, tell us what it was.
Now, but we like to keep it real, don't we?
Yeah.
Me forgetting stuff is part of the whole, I like to think, charm, maybe.
It is part of the show.
But it's interesting because I was looking at the other reviews of this show and they've been quite harsh. So
why?
They have been harsh.
What are their main gripes?
People were saying that, you know,
the characters are one-dimensional,
unlikable, which I find such a crass criticism. Of course they're unlikable. The whole point of it is that they're selfish, self-absorbed.
Yeah, but also they're having an affair.
People.
That's the definition of.
Do you know that's what people are like, aren't they? In this day,
you know, that really grinds my gears because people out there, lots of them, are unlikable. So why is it a problem to put unlikable people on TV?
Wait, you're saying I'm not interesting.
No.
Kay, unlikable, highly unlikable.
Yeah.
No, but there is likeable people and there's unlikeable people. What's that? Why is that a problem?
But I just thought it was, you know,
problem?
I think it's weird that we get to the point where this is clearly a very well, sharply written, kind of great cast, funny, bold, the way it talks about sex and relationships and stuff. All the way through, I was like, I thought every single scene was entertaining me, and I kind of believed it. And then I'm reading reviews. I think that we've really got to the point where there's so much out there. There's so much quality TV out there, particularly on, like, because this is a Netflix show, that people's expectations are so high. Now it's like, if this show isn't good enough for those people, I think it's really good.
But this is only commanding half an hour. I think it's just that
people need to give it a go because it's honestly really funny.
It's really good.
You were chortling at your desk watching it.
It was a really very good. Funny car scene.
Yeah.
Do you think the car scene was good? Yeah, with the hood. Anyway, it drops on Netflix in full, 10 half-hour episodes. I think it's better than a couple of their other recent things.
Girl Boss, definitely.
That's already been axed, by the way.
See? They got my memo. That's what I'm saying.
It's been axed. And I think it's kind of better than that Gypsy. The Gypsy was interesting, but then I went on, have you watched any more of Gypsy?
I mean, no. I've said made the shocked voice, and I'm like, I didn't watch it.
I got to about episode 3, and it was too slow.
I'm out.
Too slow.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. 10 episodes of that.
This is what it's all about. Friends from College. Everyone should get on that.
Friends from College, Netflix, Friday, 10 episodes. How many stars, Kay?
4.
Stephanie?
4.
4.5 for me.
Why did you call me Stephanie? Is this specific? Okay,
you're getting
up.
Told off or something.
Yeah.
Are we?
No.
Oh, my
gosh. What day is it?
What's going on? Where am I? Let's move on to the big one of the big films of the week. I think in many ways for us, it's the big film of the week, isn't it?
Well, Steph? It is the big... Oh, well, unless you're counting in L.
L. Yeah. That's on DVD, though.
It's still a film.
Yeah, okay, it is a film. Yeah, you're right. That's the big DVD release of the week.
This is kind of great debates we're going to have on the podcast.
Yeah. When films are on DVD, are they still a film?
It's fascinating. We got one very good response on Twitter this week. You said, we do witter on a bit. Or was the phrase
ramble.
You used?
Ramble. Ramble.
It was rambling. A ramble. Maybe keep it under an hour, so let's do a time check. Oh, God. Right, okay.
Anyway, I'm talking about The Beguiled. The Beguiled.
The Beguiled.
Steph, I feel you. I went on and on about trying to explain.
Are you sure you're
nodding as if you're capable of doing this. Let's explain what the hell The Beguiled is.
And also, I listened to that great podcast, so I can do it. Okay. The Beguiled is a book. It's based on a book. It's about a group of women. It's set in the American Civil War. And it's about a group of women who are living in a house together. It's kind of under the premise of having living together for safety, and they're sort of having it kind of like a little bit of a school vibe going on. And in the very first scene, you see one of these young girls, she's walking through a wood, she's picking mushrooms, and she comes across a Yankee soldier who's injured. That Yankee soldier is Colin Farrell.
Lucked out.
And she, if you're walking through a weird wood and you pick up Colin Farrell, you'll be all right. Anyway, that's not the case with this guy. So she takes him back to the house because she's a nice young girl, and Nicole Kidman is the main... call her? Woman of the house. Mm. She's in charge of them, isn't she? She's looking after.
She's like the governess.
The governess, that's the word I was looking for. Yeah, so she's the governess. And she says, why have you brought this soldier here? But they fix the soldier up and then they allow him to stay while he...
Convalesces.
Mm. While he recuperates. Fix him all up. But obviously at any time they can pass him over to the... good side of the Civil War soldiers.
The Yankees.
Oh, God, the slave owning Southerners.
Yeah, but what are
they're
they
the
called?
Baddies.
Yeah, but what is the Yankees vs. the
bad people?
So, yeah.
The Confederates,
that's it. Oh, God. Wow. God,
I think we're going to have to write these words. I think we have to write these words down.
Yeah, we really do before we come in this room. Now, so then what proceeds to happen is he gets a bit better. Starts to help around the house, and
you're not
going to
spoil it.
I'm not going to spoil it at all because I've been told off online.
I've read reviews that have spoiled it, by the way.
I won't do that. And actually, I have to say, don't watch the trailer before you go and see it, because that completely spoils
it. Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
And then slowly but surely, all these women kind of fall in love with him.
Yeah, they get
and
beguiled.
That's what it's about. They become bejeweled.
We should say that because you, Kay, you haven't had a chance to see this film yet. So this is any questions you have, please throw them at me and Steph.
I will do.
Steph and I went on a hot date to see it with John.
Did
John come with?
Oh,
him?
Yeah, oh,
no. Did John come with? No, he didn't.
No,
I imagined it. We invited him. He's laughing. This is how
this
forgettable
is the
I am.
Senior moment edition. Yeah.
Forgetful. Yeah. Forgettable.
Forgetful.
What?
But you and I did go. We should say it's a remake. This is a key thing.
It is a remake. Clint Eastwood's in the original.
So have you seen the original?
No.
That's fair enough. I just want to, because it's interesting, because the original is it's kind of a demented, gothic, almost horror kind of thriller thing, melodrama. Mm-hmm. It's quite over the top, and Clint Eastwood's character is ridiculously over the top, and he kind of is seducing these young girls in it, and it's kind of darker and more preposterous. Whereas this, I get the feeling that the reason why Sofia Coppola wanted to make it, I haven't asked her, is to make it a more slightly more realistic version of what would happen in this situation, in this story. And also, of course, to tell it from the point of view of the women
rather than a woman's story.
Yeah, the weird man, the definitely weird man in the original. Slightly less weird in this one. In this one, he's kind of normal, isn't he? Until the thing that happens that we can't talk about. We're not going to spoil.
We'll give you a bit of background, though, because I listened to a great podcast where she talks
about it.
I mean, this is the great podcast, but yeah, just another podcast. And she talks about, basically, a production assistant said to her, have you read this book? Because I think that you would really, really like to write a screenplay for this. And what she did, which I believe they didn't do in the original film, is that she got Colin Farrell because in the book, it's an Irish immigrant.
Right.
And she wanted Colin Farrell. Is Clint Eastwood play
no,
Irish?
No.
No, he doesn't. Okay, so she wanted, I think she wanted to make it more authentic and to the book.
Right. Interesting, yeah.
That's what she said. Yeah. And also, interestingly, she also said in the podcast that she's never done a shoot that's over 30 days. And so she must have done this in 30 days, which is insane. Is it? Is it not? I mean, it's only sort of two rooms, really.
Yeah, it's only two rooms. I can
You're going through all the emotions there.
Yeah.
Is it insane? No, it's not insane. It's fine. It's fine. You're really knuckled down.
No, that was a roller coaster. I enjoyed every second of it.
Kay, are you understanding what this film is about by us talking about it?
I'm getting the gist.
Kay's being very disdainful. Kate's been very disdainful of our review of this film.
Well, I'm loving it. But can I, so do you think, so you're saying that, you know, Colin Farrell is better
than
Tim?
She's back on track.
He's not, he's very different. I think he's good. I think everyone's really good in it. I think Kitso Kidman as the governess in charge is excellent. Elle Fanning, I was going to say to Coach Fanning, Elle Fanning is the most... It's not that funny. There are loads of Fannings. I mean, let's face it. It's easy to get confused.
At the end, we're gonna count up all the senior moments that we've all had.
Elle Fanning plays the young lady that he's most kind of attracted to in his role. And she's equally gives him the eye, doesn't she? To be fair,
yeah. Great.
Kirsten Dunst is brilliant in it. She's in all of Sofia Coppola's films, as far as I can make out. I haven't counted them all. So it's got this great cast, but I thought the atmosphere of it has this great atmosphere of light, of kind of
misty plantation.
Yeah. Visually, it's all the vegetation and the trees, and it's very green and verdant. I've used that word.
Wow.
You went there.
She said that she wanted every scene to look like a painting.
Yeah, and it does.
And she won Best Director at Cannes for it.
Now, you said to me when we came out of the film that, yes, you said you thought it was funny, and you didn't think it was intended to be funny. But I think it is intended to be quite funny.
Okay, so I'm going to set the scene here. So we're at a swanky London hotel watching this, and there are parts of it where people were actually laughing out loud. And I was thinking to myself, poor Sophia, this is a serious film that she wanted to make, and she wanted to make it beautiful. And some of it is just ridiculous.
It's funny. It's meant to be funny because you've got these women who are all het up and all getting all overexcited at the arrival of this hot bloke. He's excited because he's suddenly plunged into the middle of all these women, and it's a funny situation.
Yeah, but so there's lots of glances. Like Benny Hill.
Yeah, but
well, I mean, they don't run around.
They almost do.
Yeah, it gets quite funny. I think that's all absolutely intentional.
Boyd, let me ask you a question. Did you think that this film was sexist in any way?
Sexist? No.
Not, but is it because of the time that it was originally set in that you didn't think it was sexist?
No, I tell you why I didn't think it was sexist. It's a very good point, because I don't think it's sexist. Because it is written and directed by a woman, Sofia Coppola.
That does not.
No.
Okay.
But I think it's key, because actually, if this had been written and directed by a man, I probably would have faced those accusations. As the original was, Don Siegel directed the original, who was not only a man but quite a macho figure as well in terms of the stuff he directed, and it starred Clint Eastwood. It doesn't get more macho than that. So the original is a bit. Sexist.
Yeah.
But I think this is all about, this is definitely being directed from a woman's point of view. And I did get that sense of it. And I thought it didn't soft-soap things. So it didn't pretend that these women weren't attracted to him. But I thought that was totally real. I thought that was, they would be attracted. And how they're responding to him is how women would respond. Do you know what I mean? So I kind of bought into it. I thought it was brave that she is telling this story, that if it hadn't have been her doing it, probably would have been regarded as a bit of a sexist story. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, but I just think it's still the story that it is, regardless of who directed it. I did have difficulty with the just general story that one man can come into a house of six women and they all lose their minds because he's just so, he's the only man they've seen for ages.
Although,
and
having
they get really
said
excited.
That, if you ever look at the Big Brother / Love Island houses. Yeah.
Put one
man in there, they're all like
the
going crazy.
The big guys on the Love Island of its day.
The Civil
you can
War
have that for
years.
The strap line.
Love Island Civil War.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Kay.
So how many stars are we giving it?
Yeah, that's the move on signal.
It's not the move on, I want to know, I'm
fair
interested.
Enough. I'm giving it a solid 4.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 4. But it, because I actually think it's quite funny.
Yeah, but I think
I don't know whether she wants it to
funny.
Be funny.
I think she does.
I turned to you and said, she'd be unhappy, and you said no.
So four stars from both.
She wants it to be Kay's really movie.
Kay, how many stars are you going to give our review of it, Kay?
Hey, listen, if there's more than 5 stars, I would.
Riley Amusing.
Yes.
4 stars, Boyd Hilton. Let's move on to Nadia's British Food Adventure. Oh, by the way, The Big Art is out on Friday in cinemas everywhere, people. Nadia's British Food Adventure is a new 6, I think actually it's more than 6, maybe it's 8-part series on BBC Two, starting next Monday, July the 17th at 8:30 PM. Kay, what the hell is it all about?
So, GBBO, that's the Great British Bake Off winner, Nadia Hussein, from 2015 she won. I thought it was last year, but even longer ago.
No, Candice won last year.
Yeah, come on.
Of course.
Let's not forget Candice.
Who can? And her pout. So Nadia's going up and down the country searching to find what makes British food so great, right? So she wants to know, like, what goes into the food that she gives her kids. Why are you laughing? It's true.
It is witty. When people start laughing in the middle of your review, it's quite off-putting, isn't it?
Yeah. I wasn't laughing at all during your reviews.
You're in hysterics.
Anyway, so she's going to talk to food producers, like the people, what does she call them? She calls them food pioneers. And then she creates her own new recipes. So the first episode, she goes to the home counties, and specifically Oxford, where she goes to an asparagus farm, which I didn't know was a thing.
There's so much involved in asparagus. I was just fascinated.
It's very informative, right? So we learn that in the supermarkets, the asparagus has to get measured. It has to be a certain length. It cannot be bent. It's got to be perfectly straight.
No one wants a bent asparagus.
Nobody does. I mean, I would reject it out of hand.
Do you know how long it takes before an asparagus can be picked?
Yes, because I've watched this program.
Three years?
Well, no, go. Okay, then. Okay, the big shot. Why don't you tell me?
A few years.
Three years. Which is also a few, so yes, you are correct. And an asparagus can grow up to 5 inches in a day. Five inches in a day? So why does it need 3 years before it can be picked? I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
None of it makes any sense. Yeah. And there are all these specially designed asparagus buggies.
Oh, those buggies were great.
Right, the buggy boat moment I didn't enjoy.
Didn't you?
What? I felt a bit contrived. I just felt a bit forced.
No.
Well, because...
Forced?
Yeah.
Forced onto a buggy.
Is this a Steph-style unreasonable moment?
It was interesting to see it.
But the buggy's the...
Okay, it's got a whiff of Steph about it.
It hasn't. No, it was very interesting to see them, how they, like, obviously harvest the crop. Mm. But then it was kind of that, oh, shall we have a buggy race? I don't know.
Do you know what else, though? Okay, look, putting buggy races aside, do you know what else you learn in this? Did you not think it was great, the Blue Peter aspect of how you learn to make a smoke? I was like, Kate, this is going to be right up Kate's street. She'll be in her backyard.
How you smoke fish in a cardboard box.
Smoking fish in a cardboard box. Just need a cardboard box. You can smoke your own fish.
And she's making
you're
smoke.
You're really high-pitched. You're so excited about the smoking.
And then you can do that in Milton Keynes.
Yeah, Turan.
And she was making
Turan.
A smoked haddock Welsh rarebits. That's what she was making.
Can I just say, I'm not really that keen on smoked things.
Why not?
Really?
It's not for me.
Smoked salmon?
No, I like normal salmon. Smoked salmon. I don't mind the smoked salmon, but it's not, like, I don't go out and think I must
love have smoked products.
Salmon.
I'll be getting that cardboard box.
Well, you're going to start smoking.
Oh, I'm going to set fire to a box, see what happens. It's going to be amazing.
But I thought, when she made the, a smoked haddock rarebit.
Yes,
but
that did
what
nice.
I love about her... Apart from the fact that she's from my hometown, Luton.
No.
Dropped it
biased.
In, girl.
Luton girl. She said for ages she thought it was rabbit, and so did I.
Welsh
rabbit.
We all did. We all did.
Did we?
Really? Yeah, I think
when I said that in the office the other day, everyone was like.
Brain box over here. When she was 5 years old, she knew it was rabbit. Really? Really?
She's really dumbing it down hanging out with us.
Listen, I did know about that, but. What? Yeah,
prove it. How can you prove that?
I don't know.
You call up Mrs. Rib now.
I'm going to call up the family.
Yeah. The fam. But do you know what? So I think I really like this because I think she's very personable, down to earth. You know, like when she's making scones, she's like, oh yeah, make it with a chubby part of your hand. You know, she just keeps it real. Yeah. But the thing I didn't like, and I don't know if it's because...
I thought it was the asparagus racing.
I'm not sure it's because we were watching a kind of unfinished copy where they hadn't quite done sound and, you know, full... What do they call it? The talkover,
narration.
The voiceover.
We watched them. Just to explain, we get to watch these things on previews, and the version we watched isn't the final version. So the voiceover is done by random people and not Nadia herself,
which is totally fine. I'm not holding that against it. But when she was making the recipes. And all of which I wanted to make because she makes Eton Mess cheesecake.
Oh, now that. I was going to talk about
delicious.
That.
Which looked delicious. She makes scones. She makes this.
The Eton Mess cheesecake looked fantastic.
The Welsh rarebit, not rabbit.
Yeah. Five spice stir fry.
Exactly. When she made all those things, it was great, but I wanted to make them. So I was really listening to her and she didn't seem to give any measurements. So she'd be like, oh, right, yep. So you put the flour in with the butter. That's all great. But if I was going at home, I'd be like, how much is that?
Do you know what I think that is? A graphic to come. I think that's a waiting graphics. That's what I reckon.
Good point.
A GTC.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not only that, you're right, there will be graphics to come, as there will be voiceover done by Nadia to explain. And also, I imagine that if you go to the website of the BBC, they will have the recipes
there. But I don't want to have to do that. I want it to be on the voiceover.
To play along.
I want to be the voiceover or the graphic. I want everything to be immediate. I don't want to have to think, oh, yeah, I'm going to go and research this myself on a website.
But hey, Boyd, I really don't believe that you would ever make that cheesecake. But tell us how much you liked it.
The cheesecake looked very difficult, but it did look absolutely delicious. I mean, I like an Eating Mess anyway, and it's funny about that. I do.
Who doesn't?
It's like a meringue cream fruity thing, isn't it? And this was had all those elements in the cheesecake genre.
And do you know what? Even better, this is the thing that's going to keep me watching. Next week, she's doing pickles, which I absolutely cut me and I bleed vinegar. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, it's right. True. It's God. True. I
she's can't wait.
A horrible either. Idea of she cutting really you is. And you bleed vinegar. Well, red vinegar.
Yeah.
Can I just say, I thought the bit where she threw lots of vegetables in a wok, essentially, outside and just kind of cooked them, that was a bit kind of
basic.
But the graphics might enhance that.
Maybe. But it reminded me of when, what's her name, did that episode last
game
series.
Again.
Yeah.
The Forgettables.
Nigella.
And welcome to another episode of
I get there eventually. Nigella, her last series. Do you remember the last series?
Oh, avocado,
avocado on toast. Avocado on toast. No.
Yes, you peel the avocado, smash it up and put it on some toast.
This is literally like she got lots of vegetables, threw her in a wok.
To be fair,
she
did five spices.
Yeah, and she talked about how and she had that.
Don't
some,
be out of order, Boyd.
Some nice don't production assistant had put them in a nice pattern, and then she went through individually each spice. And I think there were more than five, but
okay. Yeah.
Question: do you think that's her real house and kitchen? Because I live in Luton, and I don't think the house is like
that's
that.
That's a show.
There aren't any houses in Luton like that.
I don't. I mean, I've lived there all my life, and I'm pretty sure
that's a bold statement.
Well, what, it's not a statement.
What about
it's a fact.
It? What about it? Couldn't have been a house
I
in Luton.
I don't know. It was very glossy.
And my guess is it's not a real house, but yeah. I think Luton, I'm sure there's somewhere nice in Luton. Your house, I've been, you seem nice
in
Luton.
Yeah, no, that's just in a village outside.
Let's go on tour.
Have they filmed in it in your house?
It's in my house. Nadia in my house, yes.
Series two, you should offer up your house.
I should.
To film. Get Nadia in.
Yeah.
Get some free cheesecake.
Oh, my God.
Anyway,
delicious.
I thought, I mean, she's very likable, isn't she? And she's a natural, that's the thing. Bottom
she
line,
is
the important thing for me, she, you know, she's only ended up by accident being a TV presenter.
Well,
she won Bake Off.
Nothing happens
accident.
By accident. I mean, she did win the Bake Off.
It's a clear path.
But there's a difference between entering a TV baking competition and becoming a TV presenter,
you're
cookery
right.
presenter, doing a show where she's not only cooking stuff, she's also interviewing people, presenting
that's
it.
Sorry, oh, yeah, we've been harsh.
I think a lot of previous presenters.
Yeah,
of Bake
who
Off
won the first?
This.
Who won the first series of Bake Off? Who knows?
Well, I wouldn't want to watch half of them do anything.
Ooh. Yeah, that is true.
But she's very, very.
She's made
likeable.
A great success since the Bake Off. I mean, she's written novels, cookbooks.
Totally.
She's baked a cake for
she's
the Queen.
A brand.
Yeah, she is.
Nadia the brand. But I think she's done a really good job.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it 4 stars.
I'm going to give it 3.5 stars.
Actually, I'll give it 3.5. You're right, yeah. Right. Yeah, I don't know why I got carried away. Because, I mean, it's a, you know... It's
you're
a
high on that eating mess.
Steady, yeah, I am.
You're a big eating mess right now.
Charming. Steph.
I'm going to give it 4 because I really, really like her and she's from Luton.
The whole Luton thing is... you're letting that get in the way.
Yeah.
That is Nadia's British Food Adventure starting next Monday on BBC Two, 17th of July at 8:30 of the PM. Finally, and the contrast could not be greater, between a lovely, lovely, frothy cookery show and L. the
which rhymes with hell.
Oh.
No, it's fine.
Save your rate until the end,
steady
young lady.
On. Yeah, so L is the film directed by Paul Verhoeven, who, let me remind you, among the films he's directed, Basic Instinct, Total Recall, and Showgirls. Showgirls, the film that people gather to watch because it's so effing terrible and has the famous scene with Karl McLaughlin telling the woman that she pronounces it Versace, Versace. It's Versace.
Elizabeth Berkley.
Elizabeth Berkley. He doesn't correct her. She thinks it's Versace.
Is it Versace?
I might still call it
she
Versace.
She thinks it's Versace. It's not Versace.
But it's like those, that's really difficult though because is it Moschino or Moschino?
Yeah, that's one of the key moments of the film.
Leicester.
Anyway, now his latest film, and some would say greatest film, it's like those are exploitation. Most of them are kind of incredibly entertaining, very mainstream, you know, slightly exploitative thrillers or whatever. This is an art house film filmed and in France, starring Isabelle Huppert, the legendary French actress. And now, who wants to try and attempt to explain? So this came out last year. She was nominated for Best Actress. It caused a big stir because of its subject matter. Who is bold and brave enough? Because I feel I can't. I don't want to mansplain this film.
I'm going to be as brave as Isabelle Huppert for taking on this role.
What the F is Elle all about?
Okay. Elle. Isabelle Huppert plays a very successful owner of a games company. Now, warn you, the film starts with her being raped. So she's being raped. Well, actually, the film starts with a cat. The film starts with a cat witnessing her being raped, which is horrendous. And then the guy leaves. She's been beaten up. He's a masked man. It's absolutely horrendous. And then she just gets up, cleans herself up, and she goes into work. She works in an incredibly, obviously, male-dominated industry, but she's very successful. The background to Isabel Huppert's character is that her father is a mass murderer. And she has a very difficult relationship with her mother, who is living in an apartment that she owns. And
with a gigolo.
Yeah, with a gigolo, and who desperately wants her to have a relationship with her father, but obviously she doesn't want to because he's a mass murderer.
And that backstory of her past is why she doesn't report it to the police.
Yes.
So, she doesn't trust the police.
No.
Right, so... As you quite rightly say, so you'd think a normal person, normally a person would report this. She doesn't report this because of all of the controversy about her past. And then she reveals to her friends that she's been raped. And the duration of the film is her trying to find out who it is who raped her. And the first rape scene is not the only rape scene in this, which is why it's so unbearably... Controversial.
Was it unbearable to watch or unbearably controversial?
I watched this. I started watching this at 11 p.m. last night, and I was really, really concerned because it is a film you read, also known as a subtitle film.
Yes, it's in French with subtitles in English.
It is a film you read, and I was a little bit worried that I wasn't going to read. And I'd also paid $13.99 on the Sky Store for it.
Oh, yeah, it's available on Sky Store, DVD and Blu-ray now.
Yeah, and I got the one to keep. So I was like, why
would
you
get a free DVD in the post?
Will I?
Yeah, that's how it works, yeah.
I was worried that I wasn't going to be... I was like, oh, God, I've got to read it. And it's I was so gripped. It was just... Isabel Huppert is so amazing, and her performance is... She completely... embodies this character so wholeheartedly, you just can't take your eyes off her. And it also stars, hold on, it also stars her, she's got a business partner called Anna, and I loved her because she was in The Returned, Anne Consistri or something, I think that's how you say it, and she was in that French movie Returned, who's amazing.
Yeah.
But everybody in it is brilliant. We obviously don't want to give away a spoiler.
No.
You do find out who the rapist is.
Yeah, so part of the way it works, the film works, is that you set it up brilliantly, but so instead of reporting it to police, she goes about trying to find out who the rapist is, who this masked man is, and we're trying to avoid spoilers, but what happens with that isn't what you'd expect, to say the least, is it? So what did you think about, you know, I'm interested to know, A, whether you just enjoyed or in somehow this difficult subject matter, you know, you liked the film on that level, and also what the hell it was trying to say.
Yeah, first of all, last week before, you guys advised me not to watch Body Heat, and I did anyway because, you know, I'm a rebel.
You are.
And you did kind of say, oh, you know, this is about rape.
Yes.
So you did give me some warning, but I kind of wish, I don't know. Like,
how much more of a warning do you need?
There are no good rapes.
And,
no.
And you know what? It might have made, actually, maybe not watch it. I think it's important I did. Because actually, for the first hour...
Was it traumatic? You think it was traumatic?
Yeah.
Okay.
For the first hour, I mean, I feel enjoyed is the wrong word, because you feel weird saying that in terms of watching a film about rape. Mm. But I did, you know, and it's very interesting because it not only examines how she deals with it, but also explores her relationships with her mother, her best friend, you know, her son.
Yeah.
It is really, really interesting.
Doofus son.
Complete doofus son. And also skirts around the issue with her dad. After the halfway point, you know, there's some really dark twists and turns and really brutal scenes, because there's reimaginings of the rape scene,
yeah,
you know, from different perspectives.
That's right. Yeah.
And there's further dark scenes, you know, that stuff that happens. And it was, you know, I did find it a little bit traumatic, because I thought the first rape scene was, you know, all I had to kind of get through, endure as a viewer. And then these other things kept on happening. And it was a bit of a, sorry to use a word, it was a bit of a head fuck. And I just, you know what, I think as well, I think the subtitles really intensify the whole experience, because when you're watching, usually I might mill around, or, you know, for example, I was eating my dinner when I first started, but I had to stop because, you know, you just lose whole scenes if you're doing that. So it means that it is gripping, but also it's just like everything's heightened, the tension, the scenes, because you're just like so immersed in it. But I thought it was great in terms of, like, her acting is phenomenal and she is fantastic and deserves all the awards she got. But my questions about it is, I feel like the attacker's motivation, because he is eventually revealed.
Yeah.
It's not fully explored enough for me. So I feel like we kind of like get to know her character a lot, you know, through stuff that's happened to her in her past and her current relationships and her different sexual liaisons and stuff like this. But I felt like it's just kind of like swept on, you know, it's kind of just briefly touched upon, and then we don't really get to grips with that. And for me, I wanted some resolution to that. And
I felt like actually the attacker represented, because what she doesn't understand is why her father did what he did, why he murdered 27 people.
Yeah.
And I actually thought the resolution to why the attacker did it, I mean, again, this isn't a spoiler, says it was necessary, was kind of the reasoning that she had been given by her father. I just had to.
Well, yeah. Bad things happen, people do bad things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I thought...
Some people just are... Yeah, rapists, and, yeah, murderers, and the, psychopaths.
Because it was inexplicable.
Yeah.
Why? I thought that was quite good, because actually, if you could explain it, I think that would have to me added to the horror.
Yeah, I agree.
Of it.
I think also it's partly the point of the whole film in a way, as well as the second part of my question, which is that it's the whole thing is about her, isn't it?
It's totally about her and her.
So she's got all the power. Without wanting to give too much away, even despite these horrible things that are happening to her.
She takes control.
She takes control, exactly, every step of the way, really.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the incredible thing about it for me, is that you don't need to know more about his motivations, because it's all about what she what she wants to do, literally what she wants, every step of the way. So if she wants to unmask him herself, she will. If she wants, you know, to go down various dark, disturbing paths that really are normally in this kind of thing taboo in this kind of story, she will go down them, which I thought was incredibly bold.
I admire the boldness of it.
The boldness of it is extraordinary, because it's just, again, you know, this is all about, you know, I think this is written and directed by men. I think it's from an original novel by men. But of course, because you've got her, this legend in the middle of it, who takes control. Actually, Isabelle Huppert, I think, takes control of the whole film in a way.
She totally dominates
it. For me, in the end, it's like a feminist masterpiece. You know, it's like, it's all about...
Which is weird, isn't it, considering the nature of it?
Exactly, and considering it's from fucking Paul Verhoeven, of Basic Instinct fame.
Yeah, but the fact is, a film about her getting raped and she comes out of it, really, like exactly as you say, is this huge feminist. You think, how has that person managed to do that?
It's quite
and
a feat.
And in the end, let's say it, we have to say it. I mean, I'm trying to not to give anything away, but in the end, it's kind of actually changed her life for the better.
Yeah.
Is that, I don't want to not get into specifics, but that's in the end is kind of what happens. And I think it's all about, well, don't think about these things as, you know, as sometimes, you know, obviously people, horrendous things happen and she's a victim on one level, but actually
she doesn't let her ruin her life or define
more
her.
More than that, she kind of takes it on.
Yeah.
I think it's incredible stuff.
Owns it's a bad expression, but it is.
But she starts out and you meet this woman and she is this very powerful businesswoman. And actually, what happens to her, in some incredibly strange way, it reaffirms to herself that she is this incredibly strong woman.
Yeah,
and that's what's so amazing about it. You can't believe that through something so horrendous, she's able to reaffirm, I am, and I can take control. And it's sort of right what you say. She does kind of own this terrible assault.
So in the end, are you glad I forced you to watch this film?
Oh, yeah. I am glad of it. It's just that it is... It's not an easy viewing, which is important to say. And obviously, but it wouldn't be because it's about rape, but because it so deeply explores it and the different kind of reactions you can have to it and the different treatments and handling of it, it stays with you.
Yeah, and in the end, I'm going to say, because I watched it twice, you know, I watched it in the cinema when
you
it came out,
it.
And I watched it again on DVD.
Oh, you can have my DVD when I get it through the... When will I get it? How many days after will I get it?
You're probably getting it in a few days, I think three or four days, I've already got another DVD, thank you very much.
Keep my DVDs to myself.
I think, I'm going to use the word, I think it is entertaining, I have to say that word. I think it obviously is traumatic and it is grim, and
it is entertaining.
It's scene for scene, it rolls along. You know, it's incredibly riveting, isn't it? And I was going to say again, I think it's an absolutely brilliant masterpiece.
Is not like me, and she doesn't. I watch so many horrific real life murder programs.
You love a horrific real life murder.
I do. And so I really did find this entertaining. And I thought it was really actually, if you can say, I actually thought it was a very enjoyable watch.
Yeah.
But I think I'm probably a bit more desensitized to that kind of stuff because I see all those real life things, whereas I know that is not Kay's shtick at all.
Can I just point out, before I ask you how many stars you give it, in your notes, I like the fact that you've written Isabelle, you called it Isabelle Hobbit.
Oh,
with two
that's
B's,
meant to be
that's
P.
brilliant.
That was
it's because you didn't
I was
say
saying
it to be
Isabelle
fair.
Hubert. Yeah. But in my mind, that's a B, Hubert.
Yeah. Hubert. Oh, I see.
That's why
yeah.
I wrote it like
Isabelle
that.
Hubbard.
Phonetically.
How many stars, Kay, are you going to give this extraordinary roller coaster of a film?
Well, I was going to give it 3.5, but having chatted through it, I'm actually going to give it 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a 5 from me. It's one of my favourite films of certainly recent years.
I think I'm going to take your quote, feminist masterpiece. I thoroughly enjoyed
Thanks.
It. 5 stars.
Well, I'm glad I mansplained that film.
Why is it mansplaining?
I just feel, you know, you just feel what, you know, you have
to. That is ridiculous. You're allowed to
I'm allowed,
talk about
yeah.
it.
Thanks.
Yeah. We've given you permission
you
as
have
women.
Given me permission as women. Thank you very much. Now, in sharp contrast again, let's go to question time.
Question time. I mean, that felt inappropriate, but I did it.
We nailed it that time.
You did nail it.
Again, we'll just do a shout out for if anyone wants to make us a jingle because we can't afford the money, please send it in.
If you want to suggest any questions for future podcasts, by the way, at me, at Boyd Hilton on the Twitter.
Hashtag Pogs.
Yeah, hashtag Pogs or Kerry Barrow or Steph Dean, all of us. And
to prove that we listen, okay, we're on about 56 minutes because I can't remember who it was on Twitter that said we didn't want us to ramble. We're going to do this in under an hour because we've got a bet with Kay. And in 10 she's going to owe us £100.
Don't worry, I'm confident that between now and finishing the question,
right,
you won't be able to finish under an hour.
The question is, who's your favourite, in relation to Nadia's British Food Adventure, who's your favourite TV chef or cook, host kind of person?
You've got to be coherent.
No, don't try and get us off track.
Who is your favourite TV cook slash cookery host slash chef?
Okay, I'm going to go. Because I'm going to go really, really quickly. Right, okay. Have you ever heard of Pioneer Woman?
No.
Oh, right. Well, I'm going to tell you about her. Her name is Ree Drummond. Now, when I was in New York, I used to watch her all the time. So she lives on this working ranch in Oklahoma. And her whole cookery show is making food from the ranch, from her family. And it's like real kind of like Southern American food. But she is incredibly watchable and an amazing woman.
What channel is she on?
It's on the Food Network.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Okay.
Mine's Ramsay. Gordon Ramsay, only because I'm basing on having interviewed him a lot, and I think he's very entertaining both on a show
like
and in real life. He gives you good chat, good anecdotes. He's a bit of a laugh, and he's banned me from his restaurants, which I presumed was a joke. Boyd.
I grew up watching The Galloping Gourmet, Graham Kerr, who's brilliant, but I'm going to go for Nigella. I do think she's fantastic.
Really?
Avocado on toast, Nigella?
Once you get over the
avocado...
Did you
not know the recipe before you saw it on TV?
I even forgive her the incredible banality of avocado on toast. Because she is brilliant. Yeah, I love her. So there we go. That is the Unmissables for this week. Please do give us feedback, rate us and review us on the iTunes, and we'll be back next week with more delights.
Hey, Boyd.
Yeah?
We're one step closer to £100 under an hour.
Bye.
Bye.
Back of the net.